You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 45, Protecting That View Screen Moment. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including Destination Star Trek London and the planned meeting of the five captains. Five-year missions, birthday tribute to George Takei, Shatner dining with his millionth Twitter follower, Brian Fuller's view of Star Trek on TV post-2013, and some news that's erupting around the next JJ movie. Then in the feature, we're joined by Brian Finifter to discuss Romulans and the Enterprise episode Minefield. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm doing fantastic. We can't seem to find the same recording time, so I'm in a completely different headspace now because it's about 10:30 at night, but I had some coffee, so I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's afternoon here. It's about 2:30 in the afternoon, so we are all over the place recently with our recording times. So I wonder when you listen back if you can tell what time it is for us. Maybe we're groggy, maybe we're hyper. I'm not sure.
Yeah, or in the case of last week, where we had people in four different time zones. Yeah. Some of us are groggy, some of us are hyper, some of us are waking up over the course of the show.
Right. Some of us are drinking pints.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, why don't we just hop into the show this week and get going here. And the first thing, Greg, is we had a mailbag this week. We have a couple of items. And I want to give a shout out basically to a couple of our fellow podcasts out there in the Star Trek community. We got a message from Christopher Rathjen of Improvised Star Trek, which is a comedy take on Star Trek. Very popular, very good show. And they're coming up in a milestone. They're coming up on their one-year anniversary.
Oh, and that's fantastic.
It's interesting. A lot of shows seem to be coming up because we're coming up on our one-year anniversary next month as well. And maybe there was just something about the spring of 2011, that something in the water that we all decided to start doing our Star Trek shows. But so there's a whole wealth of Star Trek material out there right now. And also, Greg, they're going to start doing a live show. This is very interesting. In addition to the podcast, starting on May 5th, they're going to be doing a live show at the IO Theater in Chicago. So if you want to actually go and watch Improvised Star Trek, you'll be able to.
That sounds really fantastic. I'm just thinking of like whose line is it anyway, but all Star Trek themed. That could be really fantastic. So I haven't actually checked out this podcast. Where can I hear them?
If you go, they have a short link that will get you there. This is quite useful because iTunes has those long links. If you go to bit.ly, bit.ly/improvstartrek, then that'll take you right over there, and you can hear the show. And I think from there you can get other links too. There are other places as well. So congratulations to Improvised Star Trek on the milestone. And Greg, there's one other show that's coming up on a first anniversary as well. And that's someone we've talked about before. That's Treknologic.
Ah.
And we seem to be in step with them too, because this week they are going to be releasing their 50th episode. And for us, we're on, what, 45 now?
Mm-hmm.
I believe, and their first anniversary as well. So, again, for those who don't listen to Treknologic, if you hop over to iTunes, and I don't have a short link for them, but you just hop over and type in Treknologic, and you'll find their show as well. So, congratulations to Treknologic, too. All right, Greg. So, let's move on into news this week, and what do we have up first?
Well, something really fantastic I hear is coming to London later this year. All five Star Trek captains, I hear, will be appearing at the London Olympics. I believe Scott Bakula will be playing baseball. Kate Mulgrew will be participating in badminton. Avery Brooks, of course, is in the new piano competition. Am I correct about it? I'm I think I might be confused.
I don't know. Now, is piano a demonstration sport in the London Olympics?
Well, you know, rhythmic gymnastics was a demonstration sport for many years, but as people got so into it and really feeling the rhythm, as it were, it became a real sport, quote unquote. So yeah, piano is getting there. You know, it's not quite as athletic, but if you see Avery Brooks play the piano, you know it can get athletic.
Yeah, it can. It can. It can get a little bit crazy, too. So maybe it's like figure skating. You know, they have freestyle, they have a short program, so forth. Maybe there's, you know, athletic piano, there's crazy deranged piano, there's what the hell is he talking about piano? And you combine all
piano,
the scores.
Basically.
Yeah. So maybe that, you might be right. No, actually, Greg, I think you're a little confused, and I understand, because the Olympics are coming up in London, but this is actually about Destination Star Trek London, the convention that we talked about a few shows ago.
That's
going to be coming up in October. So
yes, indeed. And on all five captains. Now, I may be incorrect about this, but I believe this is the first time they've gotten all five captains together on the same stage.
That's actually apparently true. And when I heard that, I also thought for a second, is that right? Because it's hard to believe that after all these conventions over all these years, that this is the first time that all five captains will share the stage together at an official event. But apparently that is the case.
Surely the first four have been on stage together. It's Scott Bakula who hasn't been there.
It must be, yeah. Because, yeah, I just can't imagine. I was really certain that at least Shatner, Stewart, Brooks, and Mulgrew had all been together before,
sure,
at, you know, Las Vegas or somewhere. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
now, what about the sixth captain, who, of course, Chris Pine? Well, I suppose he will be off filming, so not able to join. But to be honest, there are six captains, not just five.
Well, there are six actors, but there are actually only five captains. So I guess you could consider Pine as kind of like Shatner's understudy, maybe, in terms of getting them all on the stage together here.
There we go.
Now, I did tweeted this news item out through our Twitter stream recently, and do you follow Will Decker on Twitter?
Yes, of course I do, yes. How could I not?
And he tweeted back about the news that, yeah, it's true, it's going to be him, Rachel Garrett,
right?
Harriman's going to be there. I forget who the other two. Maybe Garth was going to be there. I forget, but
Pike was Pike. Of course,
I think Pike was going to be there. Yeah. So all five captains were indeed going to be there at Destination Star Trek London.
They'll be at Destination Stratford upon Avon, which is a smaller convention happening just outside London.
Right, on the same days.
Yes, same days, same schedule, just slightly less interesting guests.
And I guess the tickets will be cheaper.
Yes.
I hope. I know that.
Yes, instead of Ricardo Montalban, they'll have one of the guys who played a modified guy from the Enterprise eugenics episodes.
Right, yeah, right. But also with the prosthetic chest.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Do you think that was a prosthetic chest, or was that really Ricardo Montalban's chest?
I've heard it so many times. I've heard it both ways so many times, but I do believe that it was real. I've seen enough pictures that I believe that he really did make that happen.
Maybe so, yeah. I think also they're going to have tribbles, but for some reason they could only get the sterile tribbles. They're kind of the rejects from Tribble Society.
Right.
They weren't doing anything. They, you know, they weren't busy reproducing or anything, so they had time to come to that convention.
Yes, indeed. Anyway,
right.
Star Trek London sounds like a fantastically good time. It'll be October 19th through the 21st in London, of course. If you've signed up for Starfleet and you're not shipped off to another planet by then to be killed by aliens, you can join. And I assume you'll be receiving all sorts of email updates as well if you signed up for the whole Starfleet thing.
Yeah, definitely. And the tickets go on sale to the public on April 30th. But Greg, as you said, if you've already signed up to Starfleet and you're still alive, you have not been assigned a red shirt yet, or thrown across the galaxy to the Delta Quadrant, you can actually get your hands on the tickets now as a pre-order, special service. And The company organizing this is 10 Media Limited, and they said that more than 14,000 people have already signed up for information. Wow. So it looks like it's going to be a popular event. So check that out. You go over to StarTrekLondon.com, and you can sign up there. You can get ticket information and find out what else is happening at this show.
And you really don't want to miss Patrick Stewart pole vaulting.
Greg, that's the Olympics. All right.
Well, so one of the Star Trek captains that will not be appearing, as far as we know, at Star Trek London is George Takei, who, as we all know, it is okay to be Takei.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, we do have a captain there. So when you said there were six captains, you were actually talking about Sulu, weren't you?
I may have been, yes. We'll be talking about Brian Fuller and his Star Trek series later in the show. I do hope that he's in talks with George Takei. But George Takei is, we're talking about him today because it was his birthday last week. He is 75 years old, which just got to give him a hand for making it this far and still being extremely lively. You know, I just saw him a couple weeks ago, and he is as spry as he has ever been. You can just imagine him running around shirtless with a sword.
Oh, gosh, I mean, that's a vision that I really didn't need, Greg. So thanks a lot for that. I'm glad it's afternoon here and not morning. And I didn't just... Anyway, yeah, so it was his birthday. And there was a really cool thing that came out. Our friends at Five Year Mission put together a special birthday song for George Takei, which I understand George Takei actually shared the song after he saw it, which was really cool. And just wanted to mention that this was out there. I really enjoyed the song. It was really fun. Just, again, it's a nice tribute. And actually, I also heard that Five Year Mission was on the local news there in Indianapolis as a result of this song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, some great local coverage for them there.
Yeah, it's a fantastic song. You know, you're used to Five Year Mission doing their songs based off episodes, and they have a certain shtick that goes into those episodes. But this is just a straightforward happy birthday, you know, sort of like Marilyn Monroe doing her happy birthday to JFK, but just it's their love letter to George Takei, and it's hilarious and heartfelt and well produced, and I'm a huge fan of this song, actually.
Yeah, I am too. It was great. So if you haven't heard this one, go check it out. Go over to fiveyearmission.net, and you can watch the guys playing and singing in the video, and they also have the MP3, and you can just download it for free. So great thing. And also on behalf of us, I know we're a few days late because of our release schedule, but happy birthday to George Takei.
Yes.
Okay, Greg, so as we're talking about original series cast members here, we had a little bit of news about William Shatner that didn't involve releasing a new album or appearing on any kind of TV shows that end up getting canceled. So this was it was a great thing for fans. You know, one thing I love about William Shatner is over the years, as he's really embraced his place within the Star Trek history, he's become very open to interacting with the fans. And of course, he's very active on Twitter these days as well. And he agreed that he would have dinner with his 1 millionth Twitter follower. And that number came to pass, and the big event happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's just fantastic, especially to see these original series actors embracing social media. I mean, Takei talked about, he actually has a team of interns that help him run his Facebook account. Now, I don't know if Shatner has a team of interns, but just to see him on Twitter and interacting with fans on a daily basis is really cool. And here he was in Charlotte, North Carolina for his Shatner Rules tour, and he just sat down to dinner with Troy Pound and his wife, who's a fan from Wagner, South Carolina, who just happened to be his 1 millionth follower. It's really cool, and I can't imagine what dinner with Shatner would be like.
Yeah, I wonder. So congratulations to Troy, first of all, for that big event, which I know there are millions of Star Trek fans out there, actually, who would love to have dinner with William Shatner. And then, Greg, I wanted to ask you about this. Now, if you had dinner with William Shatner, what would you ask him, or what kind of things would you talk to him about?
Oh, you mean other than asking him what Ronald Moore thinks of the deleted ending of Star Trek Generations?
Yeah, yes, because I know that's the one question that you're gonna, like, we talked about before, even with your love of Battlestar Galactica.
So say we all.
If you had a chance to meet Ronald D. Moore, all you're gonna ask him about, you're just gonna keep changing the subject back to that deleted ending, correct?
Right. Now, what would I ask Shatner about? That's a very good question. In all seriousness, I'd like to talk to him about how he approached playing Kirk and how that developed over the years. You know, what did he think going into the series about who Kirk was and how to approach it, and then going into the movies? Because I feel like his approach to it changed based on which film he was doing, based on where he was in his life. And I think there's a really interesting conversation to be had there.
Yeah, I agree. That would be very interesting. And I think you're right. And you see that too with, you've listened to Has-Been, right? The album mm-hmm, Has-Been,
yeah.
Which I believe, except for Common People, I believe everything else on there is original material that Shatner mm-hmm. wrote, or he wrote, you know, together with someone like Real, I think was written with Brad Paisley. But you really feel his inner thoughts there. And you feel how his life evolved and changed. And I think you see that in the movies too. When you see in the original series, Kirk is, you know, like the ladies' man, and he's the adventurer, right. And he's going out. And in the movies, he plays Kirk as this much wiser person who maybe has some regrets through his life as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's Shatner. I feel like, I guess in all cases, Kirk is Shatner, but I felt like in the movies, Kirk was even more Shatner than he was in the original series.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like the TV show Kirk was more like Archer. Like, we saw what Archer was doing Bacula was doing with Archer in Enterprise. And then the movies, he becomes much more of a Picard figure. Much more. Just look at Star Trek VI. That is so far from the way he was playing Kirk in episodes of the original series. It's just a completely different character. And it's amazing to see his growth, because as much as we've talked about Picard growing over the course of the series, it's nothing compared to the difference in Kirk from, and I want to say the Star Trek years, but let's just say the our years, like 1966 to 1991. That's a huge arc, and the character himself changed. And I don't know, I'd wonder, you know, how much of that is Shatner changing and how much of that is just the writing, and how much of that is Shatner actually sitting down and saying, what sort of character is Kirk now? What sort of person is he? What does he value?
Yeah, I agree. And in the case of Picard, it's like Picard became a bit more refined, I think, as a character, as the series went on, but it was just a refinement of what was already established in the beginning, right? As opposed to really changing the character. Right. That's cool. That's what I would probably like to talk to him about as well. And plus, I'd like to talk to him about the music. I know a lot of it from reading his book, Shatner Rules, that just came out not long ago. He talks a lot about both doing Has-Been and doing Seeking Major Tom in there. But because of my music background, I think that would be very cool to talk to him about as well.
Yeah, definitely. Right.
Okay, so that's great that he did this. And again, congratulations to Troy Pound for being the 1,000,000th follower of The Shat. All right. So, Greg, let's move on. And one thing that's been circulating this week in the news, again, has been the idea of another Star Trek television series and Brian Fuller. Now, we talked about this, it's been quite a while ago now, many months ago, but we talked about his concept. I think it was called Federation. Was that the Brian Fuller one that was going to be set like in the 30th century?
I think I do believe you're right. Yes,
I think that's
that
right.
Was Federation.
So it's resurfaced again that Brian Fuller has been talking about his goal of bringing Star Trek back to TV. And of course, he's in the middle of doing other things right now. The reboot of The Monsters, which is called Mockingbird Lane, which I think we can safely talk about on the Ready Room because there's no doubt that this show is going to be canceled anyway.
Right.
So, I mean, we're not going to jinx anything here. But so he's doing that, and I think Hannibal as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which Hannibal is I'm not going to talk about too much, but it's shaping up to be an interesting interesting concept. They have yet to cast the young Anthony Hopkins. I'm waiting to see that, but no, he has some interesting ideas here, stuff coming out, and it's interesting that he's still talking about doing a new Star Trek show. Now, of course, anyone who's ever done anything related to Star Trek is talking about what they would do with the new series, so it's not really a surprise. I think Ronald Moore might be the only one who would sit back and say, I'm not going to do another Star Trek series. I don't have any ideas for it. But everyone else involved certainly has an idea. And I'd love to see some more of the things he's spitballed related to this.
Right. So probably, I'm sure he's receiving daily messages from George Takei to find out if that Excelsior series has been greenlit, right? But
well, of course, they're going to do the spinoff where John Cho is going to play young Sulu,
right,
who through a remarkable series of events, a lot of coincidences involving, time and all this stuff, he basically becomes the youngest captain of the Excelsior, which you know, because of Nero's incursion, created way back. You know, it was the next ship made after the Enterprise.
Okay. So the Excelsior was built much earlier in that timeline.
Well, you know, because of Nero's incursion, lots of things happened because of Nero's incursion. And Nero's incursion caused the Excelsior to be created early. Stop questioning it. It was because of Nero's incursion.
It sounds like the next TV series might just be called Star Trek, Nero's Incursion.
I've got faith. Nero's Incursion.
All right. Well, what I wanted to ask you here, Greg, largely was I was reading through comment threads on Trek Movie. I generally don't read comment threads because they kind of, on every site, no matter what site it is, they kind of devolve into, you know, people fighting with each other. But I did read through this one to kind of find out what people thought about Brian Fuller and this whole project. And one thing that I noticed popping up frequently is that there were people who didn't want Brian Fuller. They want you. Everyone wants new Star Trek on television, but they didn't want Brian Fuller to be involved because they felt that he was responsible largely for the poor quality of a lot of Voyager. And but what do you think about this? I mean, if we think about some of the episodes that Brian Fuller was involved in, who helped write teleplays for, or who wrote the stories for, on Voyager, I mean, these are shows like, there's Bride of Chaotica, which I actually think is a really good episode. I mean, do you like that episode? Or
it's a fun diversion. It's up there with, you know, original series episodes are just fun.
It doesn't add to the larger Voyager storyline, of course,
right,
but it's just fun. But we have things here like One Small Step. We had The Haunting of Deck 12, which is kind I guess a lot of these are fun episodes, aren't they?
Well, look, you've got The Raven, you have Barge of the Dead, you have Fury. Those are three of my, you know, favorite Voyager episodes and varied topics. I mean, Drone, I mean, he did sort of get involved with the show when it was in its decline of some sort. A lot of people don't like where the show went later on. He was a part of the show then, but I feel like he was part of the writing staff that was pulling it in a good direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I can agree pretty much.
Relativity. How can you not like Relativity?
Yeah, Relativity is a very good story as well. Of course, there's one on here that I know for a fact that our friends at the Delta Quadrant podcast will love Brian Fuller for, and that's Spirit Folk, because if there's one thing that the guys over at TDQ love, it is the whole Irish village storyline with Fairhaven and Spirit Folk. I think it's kind of like you. You know, you have that Star Trek IV soundtrack playing pretty much. It's like your theme song, right?
Right.
They just have, in the TDQ studios, they have a Spirit Folk and a Fairhaven just playing all the time. So they love it. But I guess bottom line, if someone is going to reboot Star Trek, well, maybe not reboot, continue Star Trek on television, are you good with Brian Fuller being that person?
I'm absolutely fine with Brian Fuller. I'd rather see Brian Fuller do a new Star Trek series than to see him be involved in the Battlestar reboot that's happening. That doesn't need to be done. I'd much rather see Star Trek continued on TV in whatever form. If it's part of the JJ universe, if it's a continuation, you know, if it's Rikers in Space. I just want to see more Trek on TV, and I think Brian Fuller is definitely on my short list of people that I'd like to see helming it.
Yeah, well, I think I would be fine with it, too. I just hope that there will be new Star Trek on TV at some point. I guess last point on this story here, he hopes that it can follow the next movie in 2013. Now, do you see that happening?
Do I see there being a Star Trek series on the fall schedule of any major television network in 2013? No, I do not.
No. Yeah, I don't either.
I could see them possibly gearing up to shoot a pilot in like January 2014. That's
really
what I could possibly see. I could see the film cast by early 2014, or the pilot cast by 2014. But there's no way. I could. It's possible. If everything lines up, everything happens, it could possibly be done that fast.
So you think maybe if the... Because I personally don't. I don't see Star Trek coming back to television until maybe like... Gosh, I want to say like 2017, maybe something like that. Like after the third JJ movie comes out. But so you're thinking maybe if the next JJ movie does really, really well, and the studio feels like, you know, the market is there, maybe they might put together a series.
I think it's very possible. I mean, we're going to see the Star Wars live action show gearing up. We might be seeing the Battlestar show.
So say we all.
It's possible we're going to start seeing this resurgence of like expensive sci-fi TV. If this happens, we're sort of getting out of the Lost phase of TV. And if we start getting into something more influenced by these sci-fi shows, I think CBS could get in talks with Paramount about doing a JJ TV series. And it could be as early as 2014. There's, like I said, no way it's going to happen next year. But if they are seriously getting the gears in motion, I could see it happening after the second film.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll see where it goes.
Born to the volcanoes, seen them on PBS. Born to the volcanoes, my apartment is a mess. Someone under that pile of clothes, that's from a $10 bill. Telephones are ringing in a land called PBS. Fat lady is singing in a land called PBS. Maybe she loves volcanoes.
All right, Greg. So apparently, the dead milkmen they're not the only ones who love volcanoes. Have you seen these photos that have leaked out here as we move into movie news and rumors?
I am very glad that somehow, along with these pictures, they told us that there was, you know, fire burning on the set and this appears to be some sort of volcano. Because honestly, it looks like Spock is getting prepared to travel through the orifice and penetrate V'ger.
It does look a little bit like that, doesn't it? Yeah, but there's some interesting looking stuff here. Now, if he is going to penetrate the orifice there, what's this big white case that he's carrying with him? What do you think he has in there?
I wouldn't want to.
And won't that make
Chris.
It a little bit more difficult to that'll make the penetration a little more difficult, I think.
I would think so.
But
of a volcano, apparently Spock is going to drop into a volcano. Apparently. I mean, it. Yes, we. The last film had skydiving just, you know, onto an orbital platform, but this one has skydiving apparently into a volcano. So they're just going to keep upping it. I'm thinking next one, they're going to skydive into the Marianas Trench for some reason.
Either that Kirk will just, you know, fall into it, right? As the police chase him.
Right.
Well, anyway, I think Spock looks very interesting here with his red hair and brown dress. And wait a minute, that's not a dress in this photo. What is that? He looks kind of like Iron Man, doesn't he?
He does. It looks like the original Iron Man suit. He's going to, you know, flamethrow everyone. I don't know what to make of these pictures. Like any Star Trek fan, I enjoy seeing, you know, leaked pictures from the set. Apparently these got through the Great Wall of Abrams that was constructed a few weeks ago.
Apparently so, yeah. Now, I like the one here. Did you see this one where apparently Spock, he skydives into a volcano and he rescues his twin brother? Who
is that? Cybok? Cybok, I think so. Confirmed?
Yes, I think that's in this photo here. I think it's Spock and then Cybok, who's wearing an identical suit. And,
well, you'd want to if you're going to be in a volcano.
Right, since he's in there. Yeah, he has to have the suit on. And this might confirm our theory that they are remaking Star Trek V, only there's a little twist here in that on the way to Shakari, they accidentally went down to the volcano planet instead. And so Spock had to go rescue Cybok. And as you can see in this photo here, they're shaking hands or laughing it up. You know, that was
perhaps
a close call.
What was the episode of Voyager where they go to, it was Voyager, right? Where they go to the planet with all the lava, and I might be getting my episodes mixed up, but isn't this the episode where they have like the twins of themselves created by that
the silver
sentient
blood.
Ooze? The silver, yeah.
The silver blood, yeah, where they make the duplicates.
So maybe
yeah.
maybe that's what's happening here. Maybe they're traveling to the silver blood planet.
Oh, could be. Maybe so. Never know what they have up their sleeves there on the set of the JJ film, which, of course, Alice Eve has described as being kind of like a war. It's a top secret operation. It's like a war. That's how she described the production of the next Star Trek movie to MTV.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking you've got Bob Orky, you know, with his rifles trained. You got JJ on the other side, and you know, the actors have to pick sides, and Chris Pine's punching everyone. I could see it being a bit like a war zone.
Maybe so. Oh, I think they're just extremely secretive. It's kind of like the Cold War, I guess, here.
Here we go.
But anyway, this story came out also, one other bit of news here. Well, there have been two stories out about Alice Eve, I think, but there was one in which she was talking to MTV, and in addition to her, you know, talking about how JJ's crushing it and all that, you know, everyone, she's the latest person to come out and praise how JJ is on the set and as a director. There was one little interesting tidbit in here that she mentioned that really got me thinking about what's going on in the next movie. And that's about the time she spends in the makeup chair.
Yeah. Now, she said she's spending a healthy amount of time, but not as much as Spock. And I'm assuming she means Zachary Quinto and not the time that Spock spends in the makeup chair in order to look like Zachary Quinto when he leaves the set at the end of the day.
Yeah, right. So yeah, they finish and Spock sits down like, okay, can you make me look like Zach? Because I want to go down and get some hamburgers and
right.
And I don't have a bathrobe, you know, I can't cover my ears. So yeah.
So what could this mean? I mean, how much do they really have to do to Quinto? They have to, you know, do his eyebrows and his ears. I'm sure the ears take a while. But what could you do that would take less time than that, but still be a healthy amount of time?
I don't know. Well, he sure wears a hell of a lot of makeup, though.
That's true.
He does. I mean,
maybe they're just talking about all the pancake makeup.
I guess.
All the eyeshadow.
Yeah, so I don't know. My first reaction, because we've talked on here before about how we thought she might be playing Daner, because mm-hmm. Daner was not in the first comic reimagining of Where No Man Has Gone Before. People have also speculated that she might be playing Carol Marcus, or that she might be playing Rand. And
right.
In all three cases here, we're dealing with human characters, which would require no time in the makeup chair. I mean, of course, all actors have to do their makeup and their hair, but when actors say they spend time in the makeup chair on a science fiction movie, I assume they're talking about they have some kind of prosthetics or something that has to be done, not just routine makeup. So,
right.
I don't know. Do you think, what do you think she might be doing? Could she be playing a Vulcan?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I mean, I know they really put a ton of work into the lead, and maybe she's saying that just because she's not the lead Vulcan, they just stick some ears on her and put some glue on and just have her on her merry way. But
they just glue ears on her every day.
But I can't really see her playing a Vulcan. I don't know. You know, every time I look at her, I think she looks like an Andorian.
Oh, really?
I feel like that could happen, but that would be more time in the makeup chair, especially considering they'd probably be all sorts of, I mean, unless they're just doing the ear or the antenna digitally, putting in those prosthetic ones like from Enterprise would be an awful lot of work.
Maybe in the JJ universe, the Andorian antennas, they are like lens flare emitters.
And you don't actually see the antenna. They're just lens flares on the forehead.
Right, yeah. Or she could be some kind of Andorian who was in an accident and had her antennas cut off, and therefore she doesn't need to spend all that time.
Could be.
I don't know. But anyway, it just got me thinking that, you know, maybe it's not Daner. Maybe it's not Carol Marcus. Maybe it's not Rand. And if that's the case, does that give you any idea of what the storyline might possibly be?
Well, you know, we've got Spock. You know, we've got Spock space diving into a volcano to meet Cybok. Perhaps she's playing one of the rock monsters.
It could be. All right. Well, we'll see. I did think that this was an interesting little tidbit, though. It's kind of one of the first signs that we've had of what might possibly be going on with some of the casting. Apart from the Cumberbatch photos, of course, that came out a while back, that kind of helped us know that he's probably not Khan.
Probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe they're just trying to keep us guessing.
Could be. Maybe they shut that whole scene and it's not even in the movie. It's just, maybe they have like a whole crew producing things for MTV. It's just total misinformation.
Right. They're actually filming in Antarctica with the actual cast.
Yeah, this is not even the real cast this time.
Chris Pine basically got optioned for a film and then to pretend to be in the next five films. But no, it's a totally different guy now.
Well, you never know. They're so secretive these days. This would truly be the largest misinformation campaign in movie making history. In the original series, we learned in Balance of Terror that although humans and Romulans had fought a war against one another, humans had never actually seen Romulans. And so when Enterprise rolled around and the episode Minefield came to us in season two, the writers kind of took a chance by introducing the Romulans, and it had a lot of fans kind of up in the air for a bit. So today we'll talk about the Enterprise episode Minefield. And of course, I have Greg with me, and joining us again...
It has been a while.
Friend of the show, Brian Finifter.
Hello, guys. Welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back, Brian. Missed having you on for a while.
Yeah, it has been a while.
Okay, so Brian, since you were going to join us, we decided that we would talk about what you've told us is your very favorite episode in all of the Star Trek canon, Minefield.
You know, honestly, I had absolutely no recollection of Minefields, and you guys were like, hey, you want to come on the show again, and we're going to do this episode? It's like, yeah, of course, I'll take any opportunity to talk about Star Trek. But, you know, I'll have to go back and rewatch it, which I did. And thanks for that, guys. that's another 42 minutes of my life I'll never get back. So, yeah, I'm well on record for not being a big fan of Enterprise. And this episode is one of the great examples of why. So we can get into that.
Well, it's actually good because we'll have good two viewpoints here because, as you know, Brian, Greg and I really love Enterprise. Yeah. And as far as Minefield goes, it's an episode. high praise. It's an episode. I think that I probably like it more than you do, Brian.
Not a difficult task, but yeah.
Although, I would say it does have its flaws as well. Of course. So Greg, how about you on Minefield?
Yeah, I'm the one who suggested we do the episode. I'm kind of a big fan of Minefield. I wouldn't put it in one of my top 10 Star Trek episodes, but as far as Enterprise, it's up there. I think we're going to talk about the talking between Reed and Archer that does seem to go on for quite some time. But I do enjoy the episode. I think it has some great moments. I think it's one of the episodes that has one plot line, and I like that with Enterprise when they are really focused on one story and just move. And I think this is a good example of that. I'm kind of interested to hear what Brian's big problem is.
All right. Well, I will say first, though, now, it only has one plot line on the screen, but there was a deleted scene from this episode that did have a second storyline going on. And apparently, and I am being serious here, apparently Hoshi is taking Denobulan language lessons from Phlox, and there was a scene where she was learning medical terminology in Denobulan. And for some reason, that was cut out of the episode.
why would they cut such an essential scene? That sounds very important.
That's the thing, is there is actually a B plot to this episode, which consists entirely of Hoshi trying to stand up in sickbay and failing to stand up.
Right. I guess we can go ahead and hit on this. But, you know, so they set up a minefield, blow up part of the ship, stick another mine on the ship. The Romulans show up, start yelling at us, and then shoot at us. And Hoshi must get to the bridge to let Archer know, Captain, I think they want us to leave.
How are we going to know what they want us to do unless I get back to the bridge?
Right. She could just, she doesn't need to actually hear what they said, right? She could just, right, exactly. I think they want us to leave. She should have just said that.
She's like Enterprise's Deanna Troi, especially from like the first season.
Yeah.
You know, Captain, I think, you know, I know they're shooting a broad spectrum of, you know, photon torpedoes at us. I think they
sense
angry.
Some hostility. Yes. Thank you, counselor. Yeah.
So, Hoshi's, I mean, she does let him know that it's the Romulans that are coming after them.
Yeah.
So that's
And then we get
helpful.
This whole big. Okay, so, all right, here's my main issue with this episode and with Enterprise in general. Enterprise is a prequel. A prequel, when done well, takes, you know, what you already know and adds a dimension to it, adds a facet, adds detail and nuance and layers to it, and does it skillfully in a way that weaves into what you have already seen and what has already been established in some kind of, you know, impressive
right.
fashion. And Enterprise, every time it attempted to do that, at least prior to Manny Koto taking over in the season 4 area, every time they tried to do that, they just did it so clunkily and ham-fistedly. And this episode is a great example of, oh, we're going to fight the Romulans in this episode, and this is going to be the first real interaction we have with the Romulans. But we know, because of Star Trek we've already seen, that we can't actually see their faces, because that will be a big deal later on. So we're just not going to see their faces. And we're not going to ever explain.
Right,
that's, I mean, it's not going to be part of the episode. That's not going to be an important part of the plot in any way, shape, or form. It's just going to be the way it is because it has to be the way it is. And otherwise, it's going to be a totally normal, by-the-numbers, by-the-book kind of episode. Ugh. And
so this was kind of like...
Thankfully, they haven't invented the let's look at their bridge because we feel like it technology that they got by Balance of Terror.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah. You know, one thing that I did like in here, these are things I like about Enterprise compared to some of the other mm-hmm. series, that when they needed to see the damage that was done to the ship by the first mine, I mean, you noticed that you felt like they were trying to get a view of the ship in a way that you would in real life. Like, there are some cameras on the exterior of the ship,
yeah.
as opposed to some, like, magical technology that lets them see the ship from a third-person perspective
sure.
out in space.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
I was just thinking, as you were saying that, Brian, that this episode is it's a lot like The Next Generation, right, where Picard is injured in the cave and Wesley has to save Picard. Because here you've got Archer saving Reed outside the ship, and that's what the whole episode's about, really.
Yeah.
Right.
Not really,
yeah,
though.
I mean, not
beyond any kind of superficiality of just that's the basic circumstance.
That's the circumstance, what I mean. That's where it takes place. So, of course, that's not the purpose of the episode, just saving him. But so much of the episode just takes place with them sitting out there talking on the hull of the ship.
Yeah, but what are they talking about? Like, in the Next Generation episode, you know, Picard is basically, who is, you know, Wesley's surrogate father figure, is saying, you know, Wesley, you are a man, and me as your surrogate father, I'm not going to be around forever, so, you know, be a man, and you are a man, so go out and be a man. And that's the thematic importance, you know, concept behind that episode. What is Archer and Reed really talking about in any... Nothing of any real consequence other than, oh, well, I'm stuffy and British, and, well, I'm American and casual. Okay.
I'm stuffy and British.
Okay, well, now we're going to have an understanding because we've been through this thing together.
I would postulate that it is trying to set up what sort of captain Archer is.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a different captain than we're used to seeing. He's a different captain than Reed would want him to be. You know, and they're having a conversation about that. You know, Reed says, I wish you were more like this. And Archer says, no, I'm like this. And because I'm like this, I'm going to save your life.
And that's an interesting idea.
Yeah,
I would also like to point out that, and, you know, you can't lay this solely at Enterprise's feet because it happens in Star Trek all the time. But it is actually ridiculously stupid and irresponsible for the captain himself to go out and try to save this guy and defuse
the
mine.
Very true.
No, that's... Reed is the head of a department, presumably, and he has several people working for him that are also trained in these... in the munitions and everything. Shouldn't one or two or several of them go out and try to defuse the thing and save their boss's life and not risk... and not risk the captain's life, again, you know, with the caveat that they risk the captain's life in Star Trek all the time. But, yeah.
Well, we don't have Will Riker on the bridge to say that, you know, the captain should not go on away missions.
Yeah, you don't,
I was gonna say,
have somebody hanging a lantern on it. You know, in the original series, at least Kirk was the kind of character that's like, oh, well, you know, even if Spock did tell him, well, that's not protocol, you know, Kirk is the kind of guy that would tell him to fuck off. Sorry, excuse me. To tell him to screw off. And they hang a lantern on it in Next Generation all the time, where they say, anytime Picard does want to go, Riker's like, that's not how it works, and Riker goes instead. But there's none of that aspect. There's none of that, like, texture of, okay, this is a real organization with real procedures and protocols.
Right.
It's just like, story, it's television writing contrivance 101. I'm sorry,
yeah.
I hate Enterprise a lot.
They could have sent Porthos out and had like a Lassie tie-in.
You know what, I mean, honestly, well, this goes back to the Romulan thing, but you know what this episode reminds me of a lot is the Enterprise episode where they meet the Ferengi, and the Ferengi take over the ship, and there's a whole episode with the Ferengi, and they're hanging out with the Ferengi and fighting the Ferengi. But okay, again, because of the continuity that's been established, you know, we can't actually meet the Ferengi now because we already established that the Enterprise meets the Ferengi, you know, in Next Generation. So the way they get around that is by just not having anybody ask the Ferengi what their name is. And it's,
by the way, where do you come from?
Yeah, by the way, what's your name? You know, so just for the next time you take over our ship, we know what to put in the report.
Right. We'll tell you for 5 bars of gold press latinum.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Sorry, no, what's gold press latinum?
I don't care that much,
I mean, we talked about that with Regeneration, the Borg episode as well. And that's, I guess, why I was thinking of this episode in the first place. As you say, Enterprise kept doing this, where we want to see some familiar things, but we can't really do it in an interesting way. We have to do it in a sort of side mission prequel way that doesn't add anything to it. Because if we add anything, then we have to retcon
a bunch
of
other stuff. You have to account for it, and the whole thing just...
Yeah.
Enterprise in general, and again, this episode I think is a prime example of it, just strikes me as this was built for the promo. It's like you can see the promo of next week we're going to see the Romulans and we're going to fight the Romulans, but the writers knew that, okay, well, we can't actually introduce the Romulans, so we have to do all these contrivances and just have these gaping plot holes to avoid it. But we'll still have the Bird of Prey, so we can put the Bird of Prey in the promo shot the week before and score those cheap points without actually telling a story.
Right. Right. Isn't this the perennial problem with the Romulans?
The Romulans get the short end of the stick. They've gotten the short end of the stick ever since the original series. They really have. Ever since the Enterprise incidents, they've never gotten a good show. They've never gotten a good, solid chance in the spotlight. With the possible exception of the Deep Space Nine episode in the Inter Arma Enim Silent Legis or whatever it is.
Or in the Pale Moonlight also.
In the Pale Moonlight, true. But I mean, one that really shows
In general, the
culture
of
Romulans. Yeah. And it breaks my heart to a certain degree because the Romulans are such an interesting, you know, group of characters and set of characters, and you could tell such interesting stories with them. If you had a really smart on the ball writer to do that kind of espionage stuff, you know, imagine the people who are making the new Sherlock, which is an amazing TV show that everybody should go watch immediately right now. If they really wrote Romulans scheming, like the guy, you know, Moriarty in the new Sherlock Holmes, his schemes. Take that and graft it onto Romulans and, you know, watch an episode about that. That would be amazing.
Yeah. Well, Brian, I was pretty sure. Aren't you under non-disclosure? Now, you're not supposed to be giving away the plot line of the next JJ movie with the Romulan Moriarty. That's why Benedict Cumberbatch is in the movie, remember?
Yeah. I'm not working on the new Star Trek movie, but it is shooting at the moment.
This does give me a good idea for how we could have done the Romulans in Enterprise. What if it had been from the perspective of the Romulans? Because if you're in the writer's room and you're saying, look, we want to do a Romulan episode, but we can't reveal the Romulans to our characters, but we can reveal them to the audience. So do the whole thing or do half the thing. Let's meet the Romulans and let's see who they were in the 23rd century, the 22nd century.
Sure, that's interesting.
That could be actually really awesome. Yeah. Because it's a prequel, but it's not supposed to be watched before the other stuff. So it's not like you can ruin the reveal. It's not like people are going to watch Enterprise and then the original series and you want to protect that view screen moment in Balance of Terror.
Right.
No spoilers.
You can just show them.
Right.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, do not watch if you haven't seen Balance of Terror yet.
Yeah, go back and watch Balance of Terror before you listen to this conversation. Like, that needs to be said to anybody. But that's another thing, is that moment in sickbay where Hoshi mispronounces Romulans, and we have this dramatic moment of T'Pol going, Romulans, it's pronounced Romulan. And it's like, okay, you're obviously setting up the fact that T'Pol, at least, and presumably Vulcans in general, know what the deal is between, you know, the relationship between Vulcans and Romulans, and have some understanding of how much crap is going to hit the fan once that becomes general knowledge. Okay, now,
right.
Now all of a sudden you have some kind of tension, some suspense, some dramatic something going on. But
well, that's yeah, season five.
That is the
problem.
That right. is the problem. They're not we have ready one for moment yet. Of that in season two, and then it takes until season four or five or whatever it is before we get it.
Right. That is pulled out of Manny Koto's magic bag of hindsight.
Right. Right.
But no, I mean, okay, so interesting point here, though, Brian, is that allegedly, anyway, the Vulcans and the Romulans don't know that they have a common ancestry.
Right,
until
which I was just reading in the Memory Alpha
century.
Article like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but
that's what I guess Enterprise establishes later on, is that even they don't realize it until later. Which
right, even they don't realize it until later.
Which I think is stupid, but go ahead.
Yeah, but on screen here, you're right that when T'Pol says, yeah, she gets very serious.
Yeah.
She's like, Romulan.
The moment
it's
totally plays, and
Romulan.
It was probably yeah. written this way and directed this way. And it wasn't yeah. until later that they went back and changed it. But it was probably written and directed as, oh, you're a Vulcan and you know what the Romulans are. And you're now
Maybe,
you understand
but she says,
what's up.
I don't know. I read it as the Vulcans have just been in space longer than humans. And the Vulcans know all about the Romulans. And they're this threat.
I think, yeah.
That they haven't seen. They don't understand. It's sort of like before they meet the Borg. Everyone keeps talking about the Borg, and humans don't know about the Borg, but there are plenty of people out there who know. The Borg are a big deal. We don't know what they look like. We don't know what their deal is, but we're worried if they ever show up. And that's how I read this.
And that's, yeah, and that's a fair reading. I just think it's – I read it the other way, and honestly, I think it,
yeah.
I think the way I read it is a more interesting way to deal with that situation for the Vulcans
right.
to go, oh, yeah. crap, the jig is almost up for us, and when the humans find out about this, they're going to be so pissed, and rightfully so.
I think,
and yeah. you know, that's a dramatic payoff that I think would have been really interesting to see, and we never see it.
Yeah, my view of it would be that at this point in the history, the Vulcans sort of had there were rumors, there were legends. But everyone kind of discounted it, and over the years, as we got up to Spock. By that time, everyone just said, no, there's no way we're related to the Romulans. And so it was a shock at that point. But I think I would say if I were, you know, in the room with Manny Koto, I'd say, let's play it as they have an idea.
They suspect
they know about it.
Yeah.
They're not going to say anything.
They don't know for sure, but they suspect.
They suspect that it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. As Brian was saying, because when we get to Balance of Terror, I think even Spock isn't really aware.
Yeah, Spock definitely has a moment of surprise. It's not like if it were something that all Vulcans knew, then he wouldn't have gone snooping into the bridge in the first place, because that would have been a terrible idea. So obviously it is a surprise to him, but
Brian was saying here, if it's like the Vulcan High Command, like the inner circle there, like they know, and there's some kind of cover up or conspiracy, like they don't want to let that information leak out to the general Vulcan society or something. Could be an interesting angle to play as well, but you have to play it over the course of the series. Of course, you know, you can't do it all in
and
Minefield, and
that's the real problem with Enterprise and going back to Voyager as well, that their inherent premises are these, you know, much larger stories that require setting things up over arcs and over multiple episodes and over seasons, and they just the writers didn't do it until Manny Koto, until you know the end of Enterprise, by which point it was too little too late.
And then you start seeing, so that leads to one of my takes on this whole episode is I think that the Romulans were a big missed opportunity on Enterprise as a series, because if this episode were meant to set up a storyline that would lead to the Romulan War, and maybe in the later, if Enterprise had gone seven seasons and we get to like season six or seven and we actually get to see the Romulan War play out. And so this was the first time that they just introduce an encounter with the Romulans. And then in that case, the fact that the Romulans don't really play much of a role in this episode, it would be fine because it's just a first encounter.
This is like a foreshadowing
thing. So then, of course, in the third season, they go off on the whole Zindi thing, and they just kind of, they just drop these threads and they don't really get back to the Romulans. It's really easy to forget that the Romulans appeared in 5 episodes of Enterprise, but or Romulan ships anyway appear in 5 episodes of Enterprise, but all the other ones come late, like Kirshara and Babel 1 and United and the Aenar, which is like a 3-story arc at the end.
And that's during Manny Koto's run, right? At that point.
And that's Manny Koto's run, right. Yeah, so that's when they kind of decided, oh, maybe we should be doing something with
here,
this.
Well, yeah, that's at the point where they're finally going, okay, here's the big story that we need to tell, the Romulan War and what leads to that, and then that leading to the Federation.
Yeah.
And so that's them finally, you know, wrapping their heads around, here's the big story to tell that we're going to tell in serialized episode chunks.
Right.
But yeah, before that, they're not doing that.
Right. Yeah. But the issue here with Minefield is because the thread is dropped and they don't go back to it, there's absolutely no reason that this is the Romulans.
Right.
We've never heard of the Romulans doing mines. Right. Even the mines being cloaked doesn't really play into it once they turn on their magic cloaking detector. You know, it just feels like they're just grasping at straws, like you say, to get people into the promo. You know, what if TNG had done this where, you know, instead of, you know, the child, Troy had been, you know, impregnated by a Romulan lens flare? Like, there's no reason. It's just...
And
you're just putting Romulans in to make people watch the show. And that's dumb.
You know,
that's
to be fair, dumb. That's, you know, Next Generation was not above doing that. The Naked Now is them going, okay, here's that original series episode just updated. And, you know, it took Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, as we talked about in a previous episode, you know, time to find themselves and stop doing just what the last guy did. But eventually they did, and they made some really, you know, excellent television and good new stuff out of it. Unfortunately, it took Enterprise longer to get there, and the television environment was less hospitable. Yeah. And so it just, the economics didn't allow it to survive long enough to find that identity. And they just wasted a lot of time before that point. So, you know, it's, again, I almost do feel like a hypocrite when I'm laying these criticisms at, you know, something like Enterprise, because they do equally apply to, you know, most, if not all, other aspects of Star Trek, you know, including the stuff that I love, the original series and the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. They're all as equally guilty in their own ways of doing this. But that doesn't make me like Enterprise any less for some reason.
Okay, so what if this weren't a Romulan episode? It were just, you know, villain of the week, minefield, Reed has to go out on the hull and try to defuse a mine. What do we think of the episode?
Completely and entirely forgettable.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm sorry,
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, for me personally, I was going to say, let's talk about what the episode is really about then, since the Romulans were just kind of thrown in there. I mean, maybe they had the idea, we're going to introduce Romulans and then we're going to go somewhere with it later on, and then we never did. So, but for me, really what the episode is about is, as Greg, as you said earlier, what kind of captain is Archer? What kind of captain is he going to be? And Brian, as you said earlier, instead of Archer going outside to rescue Reed, there should be some other people within Reed's department. So like the ship has its structure and it has its protocols and so forth. And I actually think that's addressed in the episode, because when Reed is talking to Archer and Reed finally opens up about what he thinks about Archer's command style and how things are going on the ship, that actually is kind of what he gets into. You know, Reed feels like the ship is too lax and there's not enough structure and people should be following Archer more strictly as the captain, and that maybe the protocols aren't what he thinks they should be. So I see it as it's one of the relatively few moments where we get some character building for Reed, and we find out what Reed thinks and kind of what kind of person he is and what his background history is.
Like Chris, you and I were talking before the show about that opening scene, the breakfast with the captain scene.
Yeah.
And I'd want to know what you guys think of this. It does seem to come out of left field, and I don't remember this being something leading up to it, but I feel like, they're trying to show that Reed has been becoming more and more uncomfortable with the way that the Enterprise is run. And Archer, it's interesting that Archer has no compunction about just saying, no, this is the way we're doing it because we are a different kind of mission. So I'm being a different kind of leader. And he sort of is, and I think this is an interesting thing that Enterprise is doing, he is setting up how captains will be for the for Starfleet in the future. This is a break from the Navy. This is a break from the Air Force. We are on these long trips. We have to be friends. We have to be able to rely on each other in a friend way, not just a military way. And I feel like that goes into what we see later on. You know, as much as we joke about Next Generation, you know, being a hotel lobby and everyone just being all buddy-buddy, it's the way you have to do it when you're on this long voyage. You can't just have this strict, you know, militaristic, I say this, you do that. It has to be more fluid than that. And it's cool to see Archer developing that even against resistance from his people in his command structure.
You know,
and that's especially true on such a small ship. Yeah, like this one.
I will actually give you that, that the sense, you know, what Enterprise should be is showing, or what I've always really wanted to see in Star Trek is the real transition between our world into their world. And that's what Enterprise could have and should have been, is, okay, here's our world is this messed up, unfair, just morbid, lousy place. And Star Trek, the world is fair and good and for the most part just. And it's like, okay, how do we get from our crapsack world to the better tomorrow? And that's to me is the really interesting thing to see. And that's why I'm more disappointed in Enterprise, and Enterprise kind of gets under my skin more than anything else, is because that's really, you know, what I wanted to see more than anything for a very long time. And it doesn't fill that, but you're right. In that regard, and I hadn't really thought about that is a good illustration of that one aspect of that transition. Okay, I'll give this episode a couple of points.
So there we go.
Yeah, I think, it did help fill out who Archer was as well, because I felt like Archer didn't have any idea that Reed had any issues with what was going on, right? Mm. He just invites him in it was breakfast, right? Mm-hmm. And they had Eggs Benedict. Mm-hmm. See, that's a bridge, you know, from our time to theirs, yeah. Brian. I never see them eat Eggs Benedict on the Enterprise D. So by then, yeah, it's gone.
But no, but Picard's still drinking it. Earl Grey tea. So, you know, some
that's
of that.
That's true. Well, Earl Grey is timeless.
But they right. they do reference the World Cup. So, you know, that's a cool cool thing, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, that's some weird bits where they mention the World Cup. They talk about, like, the Royal Navy. Like, that's one of the things that just blows my mind, that there's still people on boats, on the water.
Well, I mean, they actually do reference that in Voyager. They say Paris, you know, at Paris at one point is like, yeah, I wanted to join, the terrestrial Navy, the water Navy. But, you know, my dad is an admiral, so I had to join Starfleet. I'm fine with that. I imagine that the Navy, quote unquote, isn't much more than just the Coast Guard at that point, where the Coast Guard is now.
Right.
Just like, you know, plunking drunk people out of the water.
Yeah.
But the question I have, the thing that makes me really curious is the Royal Navy is still around, but the Royal part of that, the fact that still exists.
Right.
When exactly are they going to abolish the monarchy? Like,
Brian.
I mean, in the Star Trek universe, are we in the 24th century and there is still a king and queen floating around out there? I mean, they're even more figureheads than they are now, but do they still exist?
Yeah, I'd be interested to know, like, what is the form of government on Earth at this point? You know, we've seen, what was it, 21... Or 2061? When was first contact?
2061.
Like, just post... Yeah. So 2061, and that's, like, just post-World War III. Yeah. Everything's a mess. I don't think there's much of a government there, but I imagine they started redeveloping things. How did they restructure the government after the Vulcans came? I would feel like the Vulcans would be like, you know what? It's been a long time that you guys have been civilized. Why don't you have a one world government yet? It's taken you guys a while. You realize that, right?
Yeah, I've always felt that the Vulcans must have played a serious part in the Reconstruction. You know, like a real Marshall Plan kind of a thing, where the Vulcans came in and went, okay,
right.
Here's some power generators. Here's technology. Here is the raw materials for you guys to get back on your feet. Go. And then, you know, humans actually, you know, put it all together. But that the Vulcans must have, if we're really taking this as a reality, if this were a real world thing, you don't just come back from a completely devastated planet that, you know, a world war would produce. You would need an outside force like the United States after World War II for Europe, or the Vulcans in this situation to do some of the heavy lifting.
Well, you see that in the opening of Enterprise from Broken Bow One. You see how much the Vulcans seem to be involved in what the humans are doing, in terms of Starfleet anyway. You know, the humans seem like they have to get approval from the Vulcans if they want to put...
Right.
They want to launch the ship, if they want to put these people on. So the Vulcans do... There are hints like that they were very involved.
Yeah, and that was one of the aspects I liked of behind the pilot and the premise of Enterprise, is that, you know, not that the Vulcans were quite as dickish as they come across in the early seasons, but this idea of, like, the Vulcans are like, you know, you gotta, you know, here, we're helping you, but that gives us a certain sense of entitlement as to dictating what happens, and human beings being human beings going, yeah, thanks, but... fuck off. Still, you know, thank you, but get the hell away from me, nonetheless. Because that's what humans do.
Well, getting back to the whole royal thing, I wonder if this is part of it. I'm thinking back to Japan after World War II. The U.S. sort of saying, you can still have the emperor, because it's, like, vital to your culture, but you have to do all these other things, too. So maybe the Vulcans, not so much that the Vulcans were, you know, occupying... the planet or anything, but although I like that as a concept, but they were just sort of saying, you know, to get out of this, you know, this pit you've dug yourself in, you need to do these sort of things. And then they were like, but we need to hold on to certain aspects of our culture. And I don't know what that would be for every country, but perhaps the monarchy just had to stick around for another couple hundred years,
maybe,
just so the British people could get used to the idea of, you know, still get used to the idea. I mean, the Canada still hasn't gotten away from the king and queen.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, it takes people a while.
Well, Greg, I mean, the Japan example is a really good one because, yes, we still have an emperor here in Japan. But, of course, he doesn't have any power. He's just a figurehead. It's like the queen in England. But unlike England, our calendar is actually based on the rule of the emperor.
True.
I mean, the year right now in Japan, it's Heisei 24. It's the 24th year of the Heisei period of the current emperor. And when he dies, which will happen sometime because of his age, probably within the next 20 years at least, if you know, sometime, it will go back to one. We will have a new name and we'll go back to year one again and we'll go forward. So
yeah, it's confusing. I was born in like 10061 or something, or not 10061, which of the emperors was it? Anyway, Showa 6? No, that was the one.
Yeah,
before.
You're probably I'm Showa 47, so maybe you're like Showa 47.
There we go. So I was Showa 61.
Yeah. So
it's the weirdest thing. It's like crazy to think about. There's a country on Earth that is still like marking their calendar by the life and death of a monarch.
Right, but the reason I bring it up is that you know, it's just done for cultural and traditional reasons, and we also use 2012, you know, in dealing with business and things.
Right, you're going to write 2012 on your checks. Right.
Yes, yeah. Not, right. So, but for school, for example, we use the emperor. It's Heisei 24 if we're dealing with government documents, dealing with schools and so forth. And so the point being that for that to change would be a major change for the culture. It's something that would really be a major significant change. So in this whole discussion here anyway, it would be interesting to see what is that transition on Earth from the end of World War III moving forward and find out what happened and how things changed. Yeah.
And that's what I've always been tremendously interested in, and what I would love to see and what I would really love to explore myself is that transition, because I think that's the central important essential elements behind something like Star Trek is, okay, mm-hmm. this is a progressive science fiction in the sense that this piece of work is saying that tomorrow is going to be better than today was and better than yesterday. And so the really interesting dramatic thing to explore is that transition between today and tomorrow and explore, okay, what's the difference between the way things work today, how they shouldn't work, and the way things should work tomorrow if tomorrow goes the way it should, according to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And you heard it here first, Greg. You can watch for this in Brian's series of non-canon novels, which will be coming up soon, in which he explores that back history.
You joke. You joke, but there is an outline. I'll tell you guys it when we're off the air.
All right. So as for the episode, I do think that the whole Romulan thing is an interesting twist where I think they could have gone somewhere with it, but they didn't. I think it's a missed opportunity that they didn't return to it sooner. And, of course, Manny Coto didn't get a chance to do anything with it by the time the fourth season comes around. So I think all that we can take away from this episode is the character development moments between Archer and Reed, pretty much, which does help us define the characters moving forward. But maybe it doesn't make this the... That's why I said at the beginning that it's an episode. You know, it's like there's some things in here that I like, but again, it's not the standout. And the fact that the Romulans are in it does not necessarily make it this cool episode of Enterprise, because they're really completely secondary. You know, anyone could have laid those mines, right, and it just happened to be Romulan. So we can see the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I go back to this episode, I like seeing the Romulan ships. That's really cool. So yeah, count me in on those people who watched the episode because of the promo. But even aside from that, yeah, you're probably right. There's not enough of the character development between Archer and Reed. Reed himself is not the most interesting character in Enterprise. And just to have an episode all about him is a little... It's just there's not enough there. I think there's elements, though. I enjoyed watching the bits. I especially like it when Archer gets out there. At, you know, chain of command aside, I like the conversations between Archer and Reed. I like the, what are we going to do? The Romulans want us to detach the hull plating. I want to save him. I find it an interesting thing. And so when I finished the episode, I enjoyed myself. But I definitely see Brian's objections to it, though. And especially as regards, you know, I feel like you could have a whole series of non-canon novels called, you know, Missed Opportunities, The Romulans.
The Star Trek Missed Opportunities from pocketbooks exactly coming in 2013.
Right. And that's just what you do with the Romulans. You know, if it's, you know, Star Trek Nemesis, you make a really horrible movie. You know, if it's the new Star Trek film, might be a horrible movie. That's completely aside. They did nothing with the Romulans in that. You got episodes like Haven, I think, where they're having this really terrible storyline and they keep saying, you know, there's a really cool episode about the Romulans happening. Maybe it was Angel One. There's a really cool episode about the Romulans happening at the same time. But let's not worry about that. Let's worry about this really terrible...
Let's not tell that one. Let's tell the one about Riker on the women planet.
Right. That one's expensive, exactly.
Yeah, we can't make that one.
So it's another missed opportunity, and that makes it disappointing. But I do find things in Minefield to like.
But, you know, in Minefield, one thing that was kind of expensive but they did manage to include, and we haven't seen this in other episodes, was that when they took the shuttle panels out there and they actually detonated the mine and the blast came and they did a space barrel roll.
That's, I mean, that whole sequence
very
is
good, Chris.
Fairly impressive from, you know, that's not a trivial thing to do visual effects wise. Doing, you know, floating in weightlessness is always, although I will say it did bug me from a physics standpoint when they're kind of like after they're holding onto the panels and they're floating away,
yeah,
and they turn around and they turn around as if they're like turning
they
in water
stop.
And they shift their weight to stop, and that's not how that works at all.
And also, right. Archer says
it's like when
Malcolm now, and they turn and they get right in position and hold it.
Yeah,
right? Before they're floating around,
like how,
and then they turn and hold it.
Right. Yep. It's like how Yoda turns his chair in episode 3. You know, he's not attached to anything. There's not controls on the chair. Yeah. It's just turning.
There's no physics with it involved. There's no actual physics going on.
They should have given them, you know, thruster packs or something. But yeah, that's a little bit of extra money that they were already spending making that explosion happen.
Yeah, they had to spend that for to do Hoshi's wounds on her face for all the scenes where she's trying to stand up.
Really integral part of the plot of her trying to stand up and failing.
At least they didn't cut away to like some random crew member we've never seen before trying to pass information to the Kazon. Hey, look, there's this new cloaking technology.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been fun to talk about Minefield, and the pros and cons here is definitely an episode that has both. And as always with Enterprise, sometimes one of the things that stands out is the missed potential that was there. But I still love the show. I think it's a great show. I think Greg loves the show. And Brian, eventually we're going to bring you around to Enterprise.
Never going to happen.
And if you don't come willingly, we're going to send Empress Hoshi after you.
Oh, I'm okay with that. You can send her my way all you like.
All right. Yeah, well, Brian, thanks for staying up late tonight and joining us
to pleasure.
Talk about an episode that maybe you almost passed on. But
can we just do a good one next time?
All right, we'll do a different one next time.
Okay.
All right. Before we go, Brian, tell everyone that for those who don't know about your other show,
yes,
tell people what you do.
So I'm on a podcast of my own with some friends of mine. We used to, until fairly recently, record our own commentaries to movies. So we sit down and, much like a director's commentary on a DVD, you know, you watch the movie along and then listen to us talk about it, so the director. So we still have, you know, 150 some of those that we've done over the course of the past 3 years. But recently we've changed formats, and so now we're more of a conversational, more traditional podcast where we just have conversations about topics. So that's fairly new. But you can find, it's called Down in Front. You can find all of that and more at downinfront.net. And we have we also have a really great forum that's awesome and has a lot of cool people and a lot of cool discussions and like creative projects that people are collaborating on together. So check that out. And you can find me, Down in Front on Twitter at Down in Front. And you can find me on Twitter at Brian Finifter, BRIANFINIFTER.
Well, it was nice, you know, after weeks and weeks of Brian begging us to do this episode, I was glad that we were finally able to get around to Minefield and to have him join us so he can explain exactly how much he loves seeing the Romulans, which are his favorite villains, and he's so proud of how they're used.
Yeah.
In Enterprise especially.
Yeah, you're right. I know he kept sending us those messages, and we told him that, you know, we're on a rotation cycle. We go through the series. You know, we're on TOS right now, but we're going to come back around to Enterprise, and we'll do Minefield, we promise.
I keep thinking one of these days we're going to do Enterprise, and we're going to do a typical Enterprise episode, but it's so hard to find one because they so many times did something odd, like let's show a story about Hoshi or T'Pol's grandmother or great-grandmother.
Yeah.
Or let's do the Romulans, kind of. Or let's learn about the Romulan-Andorian, you know, feud. And that's really cool, and I like it. But I feel like with the other shows, they sort of settled into a rhythm. You know, something like TNG had much more of a rhythm where we're just going to do an episode totally disconnected from everything else. Whereas Enterprise always has episodes that have these little quirks to them, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it did feel a little bit more random. You know, the one about T'Pol's grandmother being Carbon Creek was actually the episode right before this one.
Right.
So.
Right. Which, yeah, that doesn't, I don't, yeah, we had Shockwave, and then we had Carbon Creek, and then we have Minefield, which are three of the most different episodes.
Yeah.
And there's just one right after another.
I guess they were finding their footing, but yeah, I really wish, as much as I love Enterprise, I wish that Manny Koto had been around from the beginning and had guided the series truly as a prequel to the original series more, I think it would have really been wonderful. Yeah. All right. Well, let's tell everyone where they can contact us if they want to send us an email. You can go to trek.fm/contact, and you'll have a form there where you can drop us a line. And, of course, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Google Plus at hyperchannel/trekfmg+. And also, Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
That's right. I'm on Twitter at Greg Harbin, GREGHARBIN. And if you were following me last week, you'll see that I was actually in attendance at the 21st perfect game ever pitched by a Major League Baseball pitcher. So while I may be terribly, terribly bad news for any TV shows, I'm apparently very good news for Major League Baseball pitchers.
Yes.
So I expect to be given season passes. Of course, at the same time, I'm also very bad news for the Seattle Mariners.
I was going to say.
So I do apologize.
I was going to say, Greg, there's a twist there. You're very good news for pitchers, but you're very bad news for your hometown team because the pitcher who pitched the perfect game was actually pitching for the opposing teams.
This is very true. It was the Chicago White Sox pitcher, Humber, not any of the Mariners pitchers. But to be fair, to go see a Mariners game and see them lose is not the... It's not that unlikely of an occurrence. As much as I love Ichiro, and he is phenomenal, he's always fantastic, the rest of the team does not back him up as much as they could.
All right. Well, so follow Greg, and you can find out about his newly discovered love for Major League Baseball, which I think he'll be tweeting
Take
about.
Take me out of the ballgame,
yeah,
Chris.
Quite a bit now. And he's planning to write a very deep, deep exploration of the DS9 episode, Take Me Out to the Hollow Suite. Pretty soon as well. All right. Well, you can also find me on Twitter. My username is CBrianJones. That's Brian with a Y. And I haven't been tweeting much recently because of my schedule, but I am desperately trying to get back into the swing of things with tweeting. So please feel free to follow me and say hello and chat me up about Trek. And the same for Trek FM itself. You can talk to both Greg and myself at the Trek FM account on Twitter, which is just username Trek FM. And also hop over to the site at trek.fm for feature articles, games, trivia, all kinds of stuff on there. And of course, you'll find our friend Colin's show, Trek News and Views, which is now on Trek FM as well. You'll find that there and in iTunes on a new feed as well. And speaking of iTunes, if you like The Ready Room, please drop by and leave us a rating and leave us a review. We love to hear from you, and it will help other people find the show as well. All right, Greg. Well, I'm going to head off and into the other room. I don't know how this happened, but there's actually a mine in my living room, and I'm going to try to disarm that without getting my leg taken off.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to stick some lens flare antennae on it, because the Ready Room is done.
Okay, make sure my waveform, I can see it.
Waveform!
I'm recording!
Next week on Star Trek Voyager, a waveform invades the ship and impregnates Neelix.
Haven't we seen this episode before?
Yes.
Like they're ripping off the child.
Wouldn't it be great if
they'd
done the child instead of making it a Next Gen episode? They waited and just made it a Voyager episode, and it was Neelix instead of Troy.